Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. When parents send their kids to school, you hope that they'll be in an encouraging, welcoming environment, or at the very least, a safe one. But in Chicago public schools, the district has struggled to tackle a rising number of complaints, racism, and other forms of discrimination. And that's what happened to one Black Chicago student attending Wildwood Elementary School, a predominantly white school on the Northwest Side. She attended Wildwood for 2 years and said almost immediately she faced racism, sexual harassment, and even death threats from other students.
I have no friends. Nobody likes me. Everyone is mean.
It's a case that seemed to show major gaps in how some CPS schools tackle bullying and student safety. We were joined by WBEZ education reporter Sarah Karp and Chicago Sun-Times reporter Nader Issa. Nader began explaining how he and Sarah came across the story.
This was months back, maybe in December, sometime in the winter. The student's mother, her name is Sharon Hinton. I got an email. She just reached out of the blue saying she wanted to tell us about her daughter's experience in school, that she had been really relentlessly bullied. And she found us because we had written about the Wildwood principal years back when she was actually a principal at Walter Payton College Prep. And we can expand on that in a bit, but this was the same principal at a school we'd written about, and she thought we'd be interested for that reason and learning more about her daughter's case.
So, Sarah, so according to CPS records and Jada herself, what do we know about her experience at Wildwood?
So almost as soon as she started there, I mean, the way she describes it, like the first day, she was called names. And you know, at first, I think some of the names were sort of just general, like bad names, but not nice names. But at different moments, it devolved into things that were racist and into a lot of body shaming. And also at different moments, she received like Snapchat or different social media posts, or other people had different social media posts that said things like, go kill yourself. I mean, really some really bad things. And these instances happen over time.
And this is an elementary school we're talking about, right?
She was in fifth grade at the time. She was 10 years old.
10 years old. Wow. So from your reporting, Jada went to the school administrators about this. So what did they say?
So there's a variety of responses. I think at first they tried to, you know, just sort of check in with her, see if she was okay. They were very attentive, it seems like, to trying to deal with her emotional health, at least at first. It's not really clear from the records, and we got the records from her mother, exactly what they were doing to the kids that were doing the bullying. But in terms of her, they did things like have check-ins and things like that to try to help her. However, at different points, they also questioned whether she was actually being bullied. Or whether she was contributing to the behavior, whether she was egging it on or she was triggering it in any way.
So here's a clip of Jada's mother, Sharon, talking about how Jada said the school responded.
Are you sure it's bullying? Or
is it normal friend dynamics? And then she said at one point, the principal started to say, what are you doing to trigger them?
Yeah, so as you hear, it's sort of, at first maybe it started just being like, oh, are you just having some conflict with friends? And I think that was what was communicated to the mother, to Sharon, that she was having some difficulties, as, you know, middle school girls sometimes do. But the mother was not told a lot about the racism or, you know, sort of the extent of the bullying. And Jada herself, this is not her real name, but the young woman who we're calling Jada, she definitely felt like they were sort of dismissive of her complaints.
Nader, like, is this typical of schools to sort of discount somebody's claims of being bullied?
It's not what's supposed to happen, you know, and CPS has pretty clear guidelines for educators, teachers, administrators, social workers, whoever the adults are at the school that are supposed to handle this, of what not to do. And, you know, being dismissive, not taking it seriously, those are on the do not do list. And so, no, you couldn't say it's normal, but we've also seen, like, CPS schools had problems with handling sexual misconduct claims. With other types of claims in the past, there's now bullying and sort of racism in schools. There are challenges with principals and with administrators in the schools handling these complaints and knowing what the right thing to do is.
So it looks like from the document showed that the school recorded that Jada had expressed suicidal thoughts to school administrators four times, and that Jada's mother only was notified about one out of these four times. So those forms were also missing parent signatures. So why would administrators have done this? Is this allowed?
Well, I wouldn't think so. I mean, I would think that a parent should be informed of what was going on. And there's a lot of sort of discrepancy, sort of a he said, she said in the papers, in the documents about whether, you know, to what extent Sharon, the mother, was informed. I mean, she says that she only was informed once, and then another time this year after a very bad incident. But, you know, in terms of those other times, It's hard to tell exactly what was communicated, if anything, but what we know is that she didn't sign the suicidal ideation forms. And while it's not a requirement that she sign these forms, you know, that's certainly, they have a line, a signature line, and I think that probably, you know, if best practice would be that if there's a line that says a parent should sign, she probably should sign it so that you can prove that you've talked to her, that she understands the severity of the situation. I think that that's probably, you know, some of the discrepancy here. Did she understand how this was affecting her daughter? And she says she definitely did not understand it to the extent that it was affecting her daughter.
Yeah, that sounds like a parent's worst nightmare. So here's Jada's mother, Sharon, talking about how this made her feel.
Imagine a fifth grader, a 10-year-old, she didn't even know what racism was. I never had to tell my kids, oh, if kids do this to you, this is racist. I don't know how to feel about this situation. I feel saddened. I feel it's never ending.
So Nader, what did her mom do following this?
Well, you know, she was trying to advocate in her daughter's first 2 years at the school. She'd occasionally send an email, say, I'm hearing there's, you know, inappropriate things maybe being said at school. To Sarah's point, she didn't really know the details, she said. But then there was an incident in October, this past school year that just ended. Students were sitting at a table in a classroom. One student said he would say the N-word in exchange for a piece of gum, and he said it. Other kids said it. The kids laughed. Jada, the student, she was there, and she went home and told her mom about this incident, and that's sort of what blew all of this up. Her mom was like, okay, there's something going on here. If kids are feeling this comfortable saying a slur at school, and so that's when things started to unravel. So she was making efforts, you know, even at the start 2 years back. She offered to come in and talk to the class if they needed any sort of sensitivity talks. And she was trying to work with the administration. But after that incident in October, she sort of started realizing that You know, a lot had gone on. She got all of these records, hundreds of pages of incident reports. She saw the extent of everything that had happened the past few years. And she started blaming the administration. She started speaking out. She even called into Reset, you know, a couple months ago to talk directly to Mayor Brandon Johnson about this. And so she really started to, you know, press for more information and accountability.
Have the schools at all admitted that this happened, or are they still have they admitted this? Of to knowing?
Well, I mean, the documents show that the administration was very aware. Now, Chicago Public Schools did not put the principal on the air to speak with us. So we did not get any direct answers from the principal. We did talk to the Office of Student Protection a bit. And also, I was able to go to a local school council meeting and walk up to the principal. And I sort of, you know, told her we were working on this story. And what she said to me is there's many sides to every story. And so then I said, well, we'd love to hear your side. And then her reaction was, you know, you need to get Chicago Public Schools to give me permission. And that permission never came. Now, you know, there's a lot of issues here with privacy of students where the school district is not allowed to divulge information. So that was part of the reason why they didn't speak. And also, the mother is looking at a lawsuit. She has a lawyer. So that's another reason why they said that they couldn't respond directly to what was going on.
So we have a clip from Brian Thompson. He's the executive director of the Office of Student Protections.
Focus is not on consequences. It is understanding that there's harm, making sure that we do something to stop that harm from happening right now, minimize the opportunity for future harm to take place, then moving into a space of restoration or what remedies do we need in order to make sure that students are whole and can fully access this environment.
So I wanted to sort of comment on what Mr. Thompson was saying.
Sure.
Because he talks a lot about how the school should work with the student that's being bullied to be safe and to feel safe. And that, we know in this specific incident, didn't happen. I mean, the bullying continued regardless of what the school did. We can see that in the documents, that the bullying continued. But also, I think there's a little bit of a question about whether the school district is knowing exactly how to respond in a way that really gets bullying to stop. We have a school system that's very, very much, you know, looking at restorative practices and, right, you know, looking at healing. And some of the experts that I talked to said that's, you know, that's good. We want kids to be whole and we want kids to understand the harm that they're doing. But without accountability, some of those efforts can fall a little short. And a lot of what I hear when we've talked to Sharon, the student's mother, is that she feels like there was not enough accountability to stop the behavior. So, you know, what one expert that I talked to said, if it's training without accountability, then, you know, kids don't get the message of what they can't do in enough of a way that stops them from doing it. So,
you know, by the way, we should add that if you or you know someone is struggling with mental health, please call the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988 for help. So, you know, according to school records, Jada expressed a feeling of being unsafe at school. Wildwood decided to implement a school-wide anti-bias training to address racial discrimination, including a specific plan to routinely check in with Jada. So were these plans actually put into place and did they work?
They were. And, you know, I think throughout our story that we published a couple weeks ago, you can tell the school was trying to do things. You know, they didn't just hear about this and, you know, for the 2 years completely brush it off and ignore it. Like you said, they tried the anti-bias training. They had safety plans for Jada. There's even one document, you know, after something happened, a troubling interaction, she and a teacher had this system where she would blink if she wanted to go out in the hallway with the teacher, or shake her head if she didn't. You know, those types of things, like systems set up in place to try to help her. But obviously, at the end of the day, this continued for 2 years before we got to that October incident that we mentioned where the students said the N-word in exchange for gum. And so, you know, like Sarah was saying, things were put in place to try to keep Jada safe, but it's not clear in the documents, and CPS can't tell us, they said, because of student privacy laws. They can't tell us how many times or other students faced accountability or what that accountability would have looked like. And so it just continued on and on.
So school administrators report that Jada's interactions with her bullies were deemed as normal friend dynamics. What does this mean?
So this is something that her mother said that she was told several times. And, you know, basically the idea is that, yeah, kids in middle school, I mean, Mike, I know you have some daughters. I mean, maybe this is particular to daughters. I have not heard as much of this with boys, with my boys, but sort of like the girls can get into stuff and call each other names and things like that. And so that's what the mother thought this was like, you know, she would hear things like her daughter was having problems getting along with other kids. But one thing that comes up in the documents is whether the school and whether teachers could identify biased behavior or, you know, racist behavior in a way and then respond to it. So even one of the documents that the school filled out, which is their school improvement plan, they say in there staff need more training in how to identify racism and that type of bullying. And so I think that's a gap that, you know, you can hear something like, oh, a girl's being called a pig or a whore, or and say, oh, well, these are just, you know, I don't think that's nice friend behavior, but it might just be seen as like your run-of-the-mill bullying. But when it's the only black girl in the class, when does this elevate to racist bullying? And when do you have to start thinking about why is this girl being targeted as opposed to the other kids in the class?
Wasn't there a situation where Jada's beads were actually pulled out of her hair?
That's what she said, that there was things like that where, you know, there were certainly instances where there were, you know, it was obvious racism. I mean, obvious racist behavior. I mean, something like that. And also there's like a Snapchat message where they used the N-word and they said, you know, go tell her to kill herself. I mean, you can't look at that and be like, oh, well, you know, maybe that's just normal behavior. But it's not clear that the mother was really informed of that or that they saw it in that light.
So can you tell us about the principal at Wildwood, Melissa Resch, who oversaw some of the responses to Jada's case?
Yeah, so Principal Resch used to be the principal at Peyton College Prep. It's the top high school in Chicago. It's ranked, I think, fourth nationally. It's a really, you know, high-performing, prestigious high school. She was the principal there. She came in at a time after the George Floyd murder, after the sort of, you know, racial justice reckoning of 2020. Peyton had already struggled for a couple years. Sarah wrote about this in 2019. They'd struggled with racism there, too. Students had been called slurs, had bananas thrown at them, I believe. The black student enrollment had really fallen for a few years. She came in sort of hoping to change that. And the staff there, students, they didn't really feel that she did. A lot of them felt, they say, that she didn't listen to them or didn't, you know, put words to action. And so she ended up resigning after only one school year. And a sort of assistant principal role. She was the transformative justice director, I believe, at the school. Her name is Kristen McKay. She worked with Principal Resch at Walter Payton College Prep too. They both resigned after that school year, and they both ended up going to Wildwood Elementary together. And so, you know, Principal Resch says that her time at Payton was really tough for her. She was dealing with a lot, you know, walking into some pretty tough circumstances. And CPS also makes the point that there were problems at Peyton both before her time and after her time. So they sort of are not wanting to paint this as a principal rush problem. But, you know, this is now two schools that she's sort of dealt with this, and it is a tough circumstance to try to manage.
So what's been the response to your story, Sarah and Nader? Have you gotten other calls from other parents?
Yes, we've heard from other parents, and we've also heard from, you know, the Chicago Teachers Union wrote a letter to the school district demanding that they take some action and that they look at this as a systemic problem. Also, we talked to a parent group about what, you know, that this is something that they hear all the time. They hear stories like this all the time, and how they think that there needs to be more action. So I do think that there's some realization that this is, yes, this is one incident, but that there might be a bigger problem that the school district needs to sort of really take a hard look at how it works with principals to deal with instances like this.
What, Nader, if you had to tell parents, what would you suggest to them how to keep their kids safe?
It's tough. I mean, like you said at the start, you send your kids to school, you expect them to be safe there. You know, I know that this story doesn't exactly sound encouraging to go through the system, but it's sort of what you have to do. The result of this shouldn't be that people stop, you know, going through the system, raising their complaints, but the onus is on schools and school districts and the adults in schools to handle things correctly, take things seriously, elevate them. Parents and, you know, need to have talks with their kids at home too. I know that's something that sort of Sharon wanted to happen in those couple of years. She even said her daughter was mad at her in fifth and sixth grade, and she just had no idea why. She kept asking what's wrong, trying to get more, but her daughter didn't want to talk about it. And so it's just the conversations at home, continuing, if something happens, tell people at school so they can try to address it. And then from there, it's on the adults to keep going.
We'll have to leave it there. Again, I do want to mention, though, if you know of somebody or if you're struggling with mental health, please call the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988-4-HELP. Chicago Sun-Times reporter Nader Issa and WBEZ Sarah Karp. Thank you to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Gina Montagna, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Ari Mejia. Make sure to never miss an episode by subscribing to the show or visiting us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for tuning in.
Love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.